For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller. Violinist Benjamin Beilman finds in the music of Johannes Brahms a timeless appeal, a perfect blend of form and feeling, of the personal and the objective, that makes it as relevant today as it was 140 years ago. This weekend, Benjamin is sharing his admiration of Brahms with South Carolina audiences, returning to the Peace Center stage for a performance of the German Romantic composer's violin concerto with the Greenville Symphony. I spoke with Benjamin about his approach to the work, how he ranks Brahms beside his 19th century contemporaries, the advice he has for aspiring performers, and what he's looking forward to during his visit. Here's the conversation we had. Benjamin, it's great to have you along today.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thank you.
This weekend, you're performing with the Greenville Symphony for their Masterworks concert entitled Beilman Returns. What's it like to have a concert named after you?
No pressure. No, I mean, it's flattering. I'm still a young performer. I'm 28, but I'm fortunate that, you know, I've been to a few orchestras and then I've been invited back. And obviously, I'm very, very happy to return to Greenville. Last time I played Beethoven, I think I was scheduled to play Sibelius at one point, but then there was a horrible snafu with some weather, so I had to pull out of that one, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I'm so happy to be back. I have only the fondest memories of Greenville and working with the orchestra.
Do you have any plans in Greenville while you're there, obviously, other than rehearsing?
I have to look it up on my map, but I seem to remember I had a really satisfying fried chicken and waffles meal, and I have to double-check exactly where that was. I know some people in the orchestra recommended a place, but honestly, I have to say that I adore the Brahms Violin Concerto, but it is such a massive, titanic undertaking that usually when I visit a city for a big performance like this, I'm spending almost all of my time focused on, you know, how can I make myself ready for this huge performance that I have coming up.
Sure. So comfort food like chicken and waffles may come after the fact as an reward for yourself.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So as you mentioned, you're soloing in the Brahms Violin Concerto for this performance, and it's known as one of the Big Five violin concerti. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it certainly occupies that place in the kind of pantheon of violin concerti.
So how does it compare to those other works? You mentioned the Beethoven that you've performed. There's Mendelssohn's, Tchaikovsky's, and Max Bruch's. How does it stack up to those other violin concerti?
Well, I mean, of course, the Beethoven is very similar in that the orchestra really plays almost an equal, if not kind of more important role in terms of kind of driving the narrative of the piece. The Brahms, it really feels like not only are you working with the orchestra, but at times you're sort of competing against. I think Brahms, as a person, as a genius, obviously, he had a lot of kind of inner turmoil and demons that he was constantly battling. And I think you can really sense this, especially in the first and third movements. I mean, as I'm preparing this, I'm looking at the score and I see that he writes, you know, kind of forte, forte, fortissimo, all these massive markings, which are basically like, you know, more, I want more of this. So it really feels a bit like combat. I as I play through it, I realize that I have to run through the piece a few times to really get a sense of how the whole progression works. The second movement is just unbelievably gorgeous. It's a sort of private meditation / a little bit of a love song between the orchestra and the violin part. And then the last movement really is just kind of, you know, Brahms toured pretty extensively as a young man with a Hungarian violinist, and they would kind of play these kind of gypsy show tunes and, you know, kind of wild pieces. And I think you can hear this influence, I totally enjoy it, but a kind of pleasantly vulgar side of Brahms.
It is interesting, earlier you mentioned this idea of a little more of a contest with the orchestra. And I think in the etymology of the word concerto itself, there is this paradox of both playing with and striving against. So you'd say there's a little bit more of that striving element here of kind of wrestling with the orchestra?
Oh, totally. I mean, it's both in just sheer decibel level. I mean, I think this is the concerto where you really have to, as a player, you really have to punch about as much as you can almost all the time, but also in the type of writing. The often, you know, the most beautiful theme in the first movement to me, soaring above, but always underneath, there's something also interesting going on. Brahms marks this incredible viola solo, kind of piano dolce, which is almost, you always feel like, even in the moments of tranquility and you know, sort of working in concert, you're always competing just a little bit on some level.
I could see that. Even in Brahms' piano works, usually the left hand gets as much interesting material as the right hand does, and it's always kind of some type of turmoil or stirring there, something going on, which makes for really fun playing.
Definitely. Always incredibly interesting, too. I mean, there are never moments where you can fall asleep. There's always something kind of agitating just under the surface.
You mentioned Brahms had some intense personal struggles going on while composing this. Do you feel like you have to occupy his mind or step into his shoes to an extent to play this well, or can you approach it from a different angle?
I mean, of course, it always helps to know the context in which a piece was written and to know about the composer and their personal history. But I think what's so wonderful about the great music, and especially, music from such an accomplished composer like Brahms, is you don't have to know that stuff to understand the piece. I think he's so succinct with his writing, and the piece is so perfectly balanced and articulated that you don't have to know specifically, like, was he in debt or what was going on in his personal life. I think these emotions and this story is so universal. Even, 100, 150 years ago, it is just as present and as contemporary and as appropriate to a performer and to an audience today as it was when it was premiered.
I think that makes sense given some of his musical commitments, especially we think of to absolute music, not worrying so much about a program or representing something outside the music itself, but just really making some quality pure music, as he might have called it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so interesting. Back in Brahms's era, Brahms and Schumann and Clara Schumann and a few of their friends, they had this almost political manifesto that they wrote, which was very much up against the Bruckners and the Wagner and the Liszt composers. I mean, it's really they took their art and their profession incredibly seriously. They saw it as a way of life, and they published magazines, they published manifestos denouncing the other camp. I mean, it was really partisanship was very much alive back then too.
Yeah, I actually enjoy reading, especially some of Clara Schumann's dissing on some of these other people. It's really pretty hilarious, some of her comments. Without getting
Yeah.
too political, do you have a favorite side in this War of the Romantics?
Well, I will say that generally the Bruckners and the Liszts and the Wagners, they didn't write so much music for solo violin. So I guess just by default, I find myself occupying more of the Schumann, the Brahms space. But I mean, obviously there are reasons and there are places and times when you want to experience both types of music. If I were pressed, I would probably say the purity and the classicism and the kind of perfect balance of personal and objective of Schumann and Brahms, I think to me is most potent.
It ages well.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's get back to the concerto for a second. Are there any cadenzas in it? And if so, whose are they, or are you providing them yourself?
So yeah, at the end of the first movement, there's that kind of extended period where I play on my own, and I know that Joachim wrote a cadenza as a thank you to Brahms, and Brahms was so happy with it that he said, "Oh, I would be very happy if this cadenza is performed with the work." So, of course, I admire anybody who writes their own cadenza for this piece, but to me, because it is so well written and it incorporates so many different ideas within the piece into a very compact form, and obviously Brahms gave the okay. I always play the Joachim cadenza. To me, it is just as much a part of the piece as what Brahms wrote. So, yeah, I'm sticking with Joachim.
Well, do you have any advice to an aspiring violin virtuoso? Clearly, you've put a lot of time into the craft of your instrument, definitely taking you places. Do you have any pointers you might give to a younger musician?
Oh, I mean, it's so hard depending on which age you're speaking to, what level of interest and commitment and everything like that. But I will say, for any kind of young musician, I think it's important to at least have a clear picture in your mind of what you want out of the music. If you have any suspicion that you want to be a professional musician, I 100% applaud you, but you should be aware that it requires many, many sacrifices. So if you can't live without this music, then I totally encourage you and endorse you to make this your livelihood. But if there's any part of you that thinks that you could be happy doing something else, maybe investigate that further. I know that sounds very depressing and kind of discouraging, but really, I think to be a performer, I was just listening to this interview with an art critic, and he was saying, performers, we have this crazy urge to essentially to dance naked on stage. And I think you have to have a certain crazy element in your personality to want to be a performer and want to be a professional musician and pursue art as a career. So if you are okay with that, if you are okay bearing yourself to an audience, then go for it.
Well, I mean, I think honesty like that definitely has a place. For you, when did the moment come where you realize, hey, I can be comfortable with bearing myself on stage, as it were?
Truthfully, I mean, not in exactly those words, but when I was about 10, I really decided that, you know, I like doing this. People seem to respond to me doing this, and I think I can make a career out of this. So really, when I was about 10, I decided, okay, I would devote regular practice time every day in pursuit of this. And above all, violin and music would take priority.
And in terms of number of hours, what does regular practice time look like?
It really depends. I mean, at this point, since I'm traveling a lot, obviously there are certain days where I just physically can't practice, you know, because I'm sitting on a plane. But back in that time, I think when I was 10, I was probably doing about an hour or 2 hours a day. I had a spurt when I was in eighth grade and in ninth grade where I had sort of negotiated a half day with my school because I had accumulated a lot of credits. And so I was practicing. I crammed in as much practice as I could. I was doing anywhere between 6 and 8 hours per day, which to me was the perfect time to do that. That's when your body is kind of becoming very aware and have to kind of lock in the muscle memory of how to play the violin.
What's next for you, Benjamin?
What's next for me? I have about 2 weeks off. I have to admit I'm coming off of a very intense period of preparing big works and also premiering some works. So the next 2 weeks will be spent recovering. I think I have a little excursion out into the country for some hikes. But then in December, I go to Germany for a bit. I play some Bernstein. I'm guest leading a program with the Vancouver Symphony. I have some recitals at Carnegie Hall. Yeah. A lot of good stuff. Big stuff, but good stuff.
Wonderful. Well, all the best with that.
Thank you.
And also thank you for taking the time out today to interview and talk about your upcoming performance with the Greenville Symphony.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
A conversation I had with violinist Benjamin Beilman. The strings player comes to South Carolina this weekend for a second performance with the Greenville Symphony as part of their Masterwork Series concert entitled Beilman Returns. The program features Johannes Brahms' violin concerto, as well as works by Wagner and Dvorak. Two performances will be held, one on Saturday, November 3rd at 8 p.m., and another on Sunday, November 4th at 3 p.m., both at the Peace Center in Greenville. More information at greenvillesymphony.org and benjaminbeilman.com. For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller.